This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Can technology make us smarter? Well, I'm not so sure about that, but it can make the things around us smarter. In fact, advances in building techniques and practices and the addition of custom technology have started a new trend in construction: smart homes.
We want to use this as an educational platform, not just educating the consumers, but educating the building community, designers. So we're really using this as a showcase for education.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we're going to put on our hard hats and tour a smart home building site. We'll also hear about a law being proposed in New York State that would allow students with disabilities to cross the stage during graduation ceremonies. And we'll spend an academic minute with a good temptation. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. I have a smartphone in my pocket. Chances are, you do too. Chances are also that 10 years ago or so, you didn't know what the heck a smartphone was, or that it would even be a thing. Well, recently, I learned about something else that I didn't know was a thing: smart home technology. There is some amazing cutting-edge technology going into new homes. There are also some new building techniques that will make homes more energy efficient, environmentally friendly, and structurally strong. A couple of weeks ago, I toured a construction site for a new smart home being built along Pensacola Bay. As I drove up to the site on a cloudy morning in April, it did not look very different from any other home construction site I'd seen, till I got a bit closer and I saw the structural insulated panels being used to build the home. The slab the home was being built on was raised about 10 feet in the air. So with my trusty recorder around my neck, I climbed a ladder, put on a hard hat, and spoke to Dave Robow, a building scientist with National Energy USA. He's also the project manager for Smart Home Pensacola. I asked him what made this home so smart.
So the whole concept of a smart home is a house that's, number one, built to the microclimate, which means in this area where we have prone to hurricanes, this home will far withstand a traditionally, house that's built to code. We've done a lot in the foundation, which is the important thing. We've raised the house to mitigate for sea level rise and different storms that come through this area. And then we've really incorporated a lot of the technology. So the idea is you build a solid foundation using advanced construction techniques, which we have, and then you add the smart components, which include power generation. So in this particular house, we'll have solar photovoltaics to generate electricity. We have a partnership with Tesla, where we'll be storing a lot of the energy that's generated so that we can use it during days like today, where it's really not a good solar day. And then a lot of the automation comes in using things like occupancy sensors, roll down shades, home automation and in the different technologies, so that, those are more creature comforts where the owners don't really have to think about setting the temperature, changing the lights, different things like that. We'll set up what are called scenes, and then, you'll have a day scene, you'll have a party scene, you'll have a night scene, different things like that. And a lot of it is just designed to be intuitive, so the homeowners just feel more comfortable in their home.
Now, you talked about kind of like an invisible barrier around the house. Talk about that a bit.
Yeah, so geofencing is a concept where it's typically tied to your phone, as an example. So I can set up a profile. If I'm the owner of the home and I like to listen to NPR when I come home from work, so that's all pre-programmed in. Maybe I like to set the temperature down to 74 degrees, etc. So when I enter into this geofence, if you will, which is this kind of invisible barrier, my home is talking to my phone and knows that I've arrived, and then starts setting to the different scenes that I have already pre-programmed.
And if someone breaks that barrier and is not programmed into the system, what happens then?
Yeah, so the homeowner will be alerted. If somebody pulls up to the driveway or if somebody's on the back door, there's a lot of technology, with floodlights outside, cameras, different things. You can actually see that on your phone as somebody's approaching. So you'll know when somebody's coming, whether it's the mailman or somebody you don't want. And then your home will alert you of what's happening.
We're, of course, right on the water. How storm ready will this be?
This is a 300-year house. What we've done is through a lot of the partnerships that we pulled together with the different vendors and the contractors on this particular house, this house is set on concrete piles. The whole slab is a product called Light Deck, which is an insulated concrete deck system. So this house is going to be here for 300 years. We've used advanced framing techniques with a product called structural insulated panel systems, or SIPS. So this is a well-built house. This is far and above what you'd have to build for the Florida Building Code.
To get an idea of how different this project really was, I spoke to David Butler. He's the president of Loxley Hawk Environmental Construction and Consulting, the company doing the actual construction.
How different a project is this from just a traditional 2x4 home?
Well, this is generally a little bit different than most builders and homeowners build nowadays with conventional framing. But the ease of this going together, the exterior walls were delivered on a Tuesday, and by noon, 2 days later, we had all the exterior walls up and braced off and ready for interior framing. There's a big speed of construction using these structural insulated panels, plus the ability to have the insulation already been in place in them. So you've got the structural element of the exterior walls plus the insulation already provided in one shot.
And how about coordinating things like electrical and plumbing and stuff like that?
That's one of the things that you bring in your tradesmen early on to make sure that they're all comfortable with the structural insulated panel, the SIP system. But everybody that I'm working with right now is familiar with the process. They've worked well with us on this to get everything done. And it's just a little bit extra on the front end to make sure everything's coordinated, but everything works out fine.
We spoke earlier about the Florida Code. How far above the Florida Code is this house?
I would say that we would probably be at least, I'm going to refer this to my building scientist.
Two and a half times.
Yeah, about 2.5 times more than the standard Florida Building Code, Energy Code.
One more time, just talk about the insulation that goes into this house, because it looks like that's going to be there forever.
Yes, sir. This structural insulated panels actually encapsulate a polystyrene foam that's in the interior part of the wall, and it can be varied from 6 to 12 inches thick. So our exterior walls are 8-inch thick walls with an R33 R value on the interior walls, and our roofs are going to be 12.25-inch thick with an R49 value. That's, with that being said, that is well above what the local code, energy code, requires us for this point. Plus the house, the ceiling of the house, will do some blower door tests to make sure we don't have any air infiltration. So the house will actually be a nice tight compartment sealed off, similar to a Yeti cooler.
When the home is complete, it will be a solar-powered single-family home surrounded by mature oak trees. Dave Robau says that while there is a specific method and system to build these smart homes, each homeowner can customize the structure to make the building their own.
So we have had some changes. You know, this is a custom home, so the homeowners are well within their rights to change their mind and move some things around, and we've had some of that. But the building envelope, for the most part, and the footprint of the home has actually stayed fairly consistent. Everything inside of what we call the building envelope, we've made some changes, especially in the master bathroom, moving some of the components around in there. But the process overall has been fairly easy. We talked about earlier, normally you would see stub outs that come out of the slab, and that's for your locations, for your service lines, for water or wastewater, different things like that. What David did is, based on a lot of experience that he has with custom home builders, while we were still working some of the details out with the architect, in the event, and this is where forethought comes into this, in the event that the toilet needed to get moved 2 feet this way or 2 feet that way, he's going to core drill all of those service lines for your wastewater lines and for your service lines, so you don't see any of those stub outs through the slab, which you would normally see at this stage in construction. That just allows a little bit more flexibility, so we're not like, sorry guys, this is where the toilet's going, because we've already, put in the infrastructure for that. We've had some changes, not a whole lot, more on the exterior of the home, landscaping and terracing and the pool and the cabana, but inside of the home, we've just had some minor changes.
You're building around some magnificent trees here that you've been able to preserve.
So a couple things. We got started on the right foot. So there was an older home here that was about 100 years old. And typically what happens is a builder comes in, demolishes the home, sends it out into the landfill, create problems for our grandchildren in the landfill. So what we've done here is we actually haven't demolished it. We deconstructed it. So we painstakingly removed a lot of the old hardwoods, a lot of the millwork, a lot of the things that, you know, you really can't get this kind of wood anymore. And we've done a good job of kind of inventorying everything. And then these become assets for the architect to use in her design. So we chose a company out of Alabama called Watershed. And Rebecca's done a great job of incorporating a lot of these older materials into the new home. So it's a little bit of old combined with new. So once the house was deconstructed, then we wanted to pay close attention to a lot of these older trees, these heritage oaks, and respecting nature, because in essence, that's what this project does. And we've spent a lot of time not just protecting the root system, but just protecting the drip line of the actual tree, which extends far beyond the root system. So we have a certified arborist that's part of the project who's going to be pruning a lot of these trees. And we're doing everything we can to make sure that we're respecting, you know, these trees were here before we were. So it's only the right thing to do.
So how off the grid will this house be?
So off the grid is a kind of a nuanced concept. You know, we are virtually off the grid. Basically what that means is we are connected to the utility. And this house in particular, because the way we've designed it, we expect to produce more energy than we actually consume. So we'll use the Tesla Powerwall batteries to store our energy. We'll use the Tesla solar roof component to generate our energy. But on a day like today, if we have our Tesla cars plugged in and they're draining those batteries, we need to stay connected to the grid because it's a push and a pull. So there'll be days where we're generating more and pushing it back onto the grid. And then the utility company, we have a program here in Florida called net metering. So the homeowners will actually receive a credit based on what they're exporting, if you will. And then there are some other days where two Tesla cars are draining those batteries and the solar generation on a day like today is minimal. So then on those days, we're pulling from the grid. So you always want to be tied to the grid unless you're out in the mountains in Wyoming and there's no option. But so it's kind of a virtual net metering. But we are registered under the Department of Energy's net zero ready homes. So this will have that designation. And we are working closely with our utility provider because they're very interested in a lot of the technologies that we're incorporating. I think this construction, while this particular building system has been around for decades, people are now paying closer attention to what we call the operational cost of the home. And when you start looking at things from a life cycle perspective, you know, how much it costs to actually operate, that's where you really start. This kind of building system will become mainstream probably in 10 years or so.
Are there many projects like this in this area?
Well, I'd like to say no. So I like to think we're pretty unique. And then, of course, you know, David and I have been in this industry for, you know, 15, 20 years. So we understand it. Where it really comes together is when the homeowners get it too, and we spend less time educating the homeowners as to why this is important. So this is really the first of its kind. You know, like I said, I travel all over the country, speak at different conferences, and I see some cool projects that are happening in Austin, Texas, and San Francisco, California. Nothing in our region. So we're, like I said, David and I were fortunate when we came across these particular homeowners. They had called around and they were talking to local builders and they were like, look, we're looking for some green building expertise, and fortunately our paths all crossed. So this has been a really great project. But what we really want to do is we want to use this as an educational platform, not just educating the consumers, but educating the building community, designers, even inspectors, county inspectors. They have to understand how the system comes together. So we're really using this as a showcase for education.
Can an existing home become smart?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the smart home component, now there's so many commercially available systems. We're probably going to hone in on Alexa, on the Amazon backbone, because everything is now migrating towards that platform. The thermostats are all conforming to that system. Lighting, everything is kind of going in that direction. Even Lutron, which has those automatic roll-down shades, that all talks to the same platform. So that all those things that I just described can go into any existing home.
When's move-in date?
So that's a good question. one of the technologies which is kind of creating a little bit of a delay is the Tesla solar roof. You know, we're pretty adamant, as are the homeowners, that we want to showcase the latest technology. And the Tesla solar roof is the latest technology. It's a photovoltaic building integrated panel system, which just blends seamlessly into the roof design. That's going to be out a little bit. So that's what we're wrestling with right now. What we'll most likely do is put a temporary roof until that product is available. So other than that, had it not been for that, this type of construction goes up fast, and we'd be having Thanksgiving Day dinner in that other room right there. But given that, given the delay on that particular product, it might push out our certificate of occupancy until the homeowners are able to move in, probably till February.
Dave Robow is a building scientist with National Energy USA. David Butler is the president of Loxley Hawk Environmental Construction and Consulting. You can see pictures of the home site on the Best of Our Knowledge page at WAMC.org. And one quick update, Tesla is now accepting deposits for its new solar roof system, offering an infinity warranty for tiles that integrate solar roofing into roof coverings. The company says installations will begin in June, so maybe they will be having Thanksgiving dinner at that home after all. Still to come, New York State wants to guarantee that students with disabilities can participate in graduation ceremonies. That's next on the Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about the Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to the Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. New York State lawmakers and parent advocates gathered at a school district in Orange County, New York, recently to promote a bill to ensure all students with disabilities participate in high school graduation ceremonies. The Best of Our Knowledge's Allison Dunn reports.
Zachary Lerman participated in his graduation ceremony last year at Washingtonville High School after he and his family approached school administrators. Here's his father, Stephen Lerman.
And we believe that no family should be denied what should be one of the best days in their lives. And that is watching their child walk up on that stage, be presented with a certificate or a diploma, shaking all the appropriate hands, and celebrating that later on. And for that reason, we fully agree that Zachary's Law should be the law of New York State, and hope very soon that it will be.
Brian Connolly is principal of Washingtonville High School.
The students have worked hard for this, and you know, we're not a school that defines success in one specific way.
Stacy Orzel is a mental health advocate. She thanks Zachary Lerman.
As the starfish poem says, one person can make a difference, and you're like a starfish on the beach making a difference, and you will pave a path that will be better for my son and others in our community. So you're wonderful for stepping forward. I'm very proud of you, Zach.
Orzel also is the mother of a son on the autism spectrum, Eric, who starts fifth grade next year.
I want him to march in the parade on graduation day at the famous Goshen Historic Track with his classmates as an equal in 2025 on time.
Democratic Assemblyman James Skoufis says the Lerman family came to him last year about the issue. What followed was crafting the bill called Zachary's Law, which he announced at Washingtonville High School.
It states that every school district must develop a policy that would enable students with disabilities who have specifically earned either a skills and achievement commencement credential or a career development and occupational studies commencement credential to be able to participate in the graduation ceremony with their classmates, with their friends. Simple as that. They would continue high school if they so choose, but to participate in the ceremony is an important moment.
Republican Bill Larkin sponsors the bill in the Senate. He says students with disabilities should not miss out on graduation day, no matter where they attend school.
This is not a Washingtonville High School. This is not an Orange County. This is not New York. This is our nation. And we should be very, very thoughtful of what we're doing. And most importantly, what we're not doing. So why shouldn't he be able to walk across with his students?
Democratic Assemblyman Angelo Santabarbara from the Capital Region is chair of the Subcommittee on Autism Spectrum Disorders and co-sponsor of the bill.
The message is very simple. On graduation day, those students with disabilities must not be left out.
Santabarbara says the bill is part of his autism action legislation package.
My son Michael was diagnosed with autism when he was 3 years old. He's 15 years old now, and I would hate to see him not be able to go to a ceremony with the people he has gotten to know. And you know, for my son, he doesn't talk very much. He doesn't speak a lot. It's very hard for him to make friends.
Again, Skoufis.
Washingtonville did the right thing. The matter of fact is, though, that there are many school districts that are not doing the right thing, that are putting up roadblocks, that are actually preventing these students from being able to participate in this wonderful day.
Reporting for the Best of Our Knowledge, I'm Allison Dunn.
A lot of us can resist anything but a good temptation. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
The view of immorality is different for children and adults. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Christina Starman's postdoctoral associate in the Department of Psychology at Yale University explores why adults and children think various groups of people react differently when looking at the same situation.
We're all often tempted to be bad, to lie or cheat or act selfishly. But often, we override these immoral temptations and act morally anyway. Other times, what we want to do and what we think we should do are aligned, and so we easily do the right thing. In our research, we've been interested in how people think about this inner struggle. Who is the better person, the one who acts morally while tempted, or the one who is never tempted at all? To explore this question and how these moral judgments might change over our lifetimes, we asked a group of adults and a group of 3 to 8-year-old children about two characters who both did the same morally good action, say, telling the truth or helping someone. In each case, one of the characters struggled with the temptation to act immorally, but ultimately overcame that temptation and acted morally anyway. The other character wasn't tempted to act immorally and easily did the right thing. Then we asked which character deserved more moral credit. Adults gave more credit to the person who overcame their desire to behave badly and did the right thing anyway. But children strongly felt that the person who did the right thing without experiencing immoral desires was better. These opposite judgments also appeared when we asked about which character should be rewarded for her actions, which character was more good, and which character was most likely to act morally in the future. We see these findings as reflecting a fascinating developmental shift. As children, we start by preferring people with simple and unified inner lives. But as we experience our own inner turmoil, we come to appreciate moral complexity, to admire the very human act of experiencing the temptation to act immorally and yet having the power to resist it.
That was Christina Starmans of Yale University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. And you can also find us on Twitter at TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.